The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. This week we have a special to look at the increasing dissatisfaction of fans of a mismanaged club who wear blue. But for a lovely change, we're not talking about Shanghai Shenhua. I am your host, as always, Steve Crooks. We're joined by, firstly, our regular two experts, Cameron Wilson, chuckling away in Shanghai. How are you doing, Cam?
Yeah, it's nice to have someone else to laugh at, not Shenhua. So, yeah, good evening, everybody.
Or to laugh with, possibly. Let's see. We're joined, as usual, by Brandon Chemers in the north. Brandon, how's Beijing treating you?
Hey, Steve. Fixed or not, the matches as of late have always been fun.
There's no tinfoil hats needed for this show.
We'll move on to the league,
I think, when all the dust has settled next week. And we're joined with a pod debut in a season of pod debuts with a special guest to help us look at going on in Nanjing here. Sun, welcome to the pod.
Actually, I'm from Beijing, actually. Yeah, I'm from Nanjing. I grew up in Nanjing and become a Suning fan, Jiangsu football fan in 1996. And I'm running the Twitter account of Forza Suning, the introduction to introduce Jiangsu football to a worldwide audience. And I have been a reader and a listener of Wild East Football for quite a few years.
Excellent, and it's great to have you on the pod. And for any listeners who are not following at Forza Suning, then we definitely recommend that you give him a follow. It's a really good opportunity to get a bit of insight into a club that we don't talk about too often on the pod, but we're going to change that this week. This gives us a really good opportunity in the second half of the show to look into kind of fan protests and fan engagement in general. But we want to start with a bit of a deep dive, because something that's been bubbling away, particularly for those of you either in Twitter or Weibo or wherever you follow kind of Chinese football culture and fan reactions, there's been a lot of Jiangsu fan anger growing and growing this season. It feels in some ways to some of us outsiders like the home defeat to Shenhua a couple of weeks ago, which we did speak about on the pod, seems to have been where it started, but it's escalated since then. There's lots of commentary from inside the club, from inside the fan groups, some support and some bewilderment or confusion from the outside as well. We're going to go in depth, and soon I'm going to come to you first. Can you give us a quick kind of overview of what exactly is the situation? How are the fans feeling at the moment, and why is there so much anger?
Okay, all the mess, everything was triggered by the home loss to Shenhua. You may know that Shenhua has been our rival since the day one after we promoted to CSL. So every year, Jiangsu fans gather around at Nanjing Olympic Stadium to watch the match between Jiangsu and Shenhua. And this year, there were 47,000 fans at that day. But what they witnessed is a world performance of our home team, they just believe the match was fixed because this was the worst Shenhua in last 10 years, but it's the first Shenhua to bring a victory from Nanjing Olympics. Actually, before the match, all the fans believe it's the best time to send Shenhua to League One, actually, but you know, after the match, it's just a disaster for our fans. And after that match, the club officials asked for a meeting with the fan groups, their representatives of fan groups. They went to the club and meet with those club officials, including their CEO, the manager of fan relationship. The fan groups asked for some changes. For example, the investment, the relationship between Suning and those fan groups, but Suning didn't respond well. Actually, they didn't respond at all. Yeah, so that make the situation even worse.
Yeah, thanks for that summary. It's great to get a bit of insight into what exactly was the trigger and some of the communication and events that have been going on there. Cam, you enjoyed the description of it being a fixed game and the worst Shenhua side in living memory. I mean, Those of us with longer memories, there have been some dodgy penalties that the home team got in years prior to that. I mean, how have Shenhua fans reacted to this?
Well, Shenhua fans were delighted because it was the first time, as Suning said, it's the first time we'd actually won in Nanjing ever. But I feel I have to put some Shanghai perspective. I can certainly understand the frustration of Jiangsu fans losing to the team which they hate. I can understand that as a football fan, but it's a bit of a historical anomaly that Shenhua went so long without ever winning in Nanjing, because it's not like Jiangsu's ever been significantly better or worse than Shenhua. They're two fairly equal teams throughout most of their history as CSL competitors. So in that way, it was a matter of time before Shenhua won a game in Nanjing, and it finally happened. But I'm actually really interested, just to interject, to ask Suning, what is it about the rivalry? Why do the Jiangsu fans hate Shenhua so much? Because I don't think it goes both ways exactly the same. I think Shenhua fans don't like Jiangsu, but they've got other enemies like, of course, Beijing or SIPG. So, Suning, could you tell me what is the basis of the rivalry?
Okay, the root cause was the first match between Shenhua and Jiangsu. That was in 2009 when Jiangsu promoted to CSL. And the first match we played away at Hongkou Stadium, and we were leading 1-2 for almost the whole match. But in the last 3 minutes, Shenhua came from back and defeated us. But after that match, our away fans was attacked by Shenhua fans, and a few Shenhua fans shouted at us like "Shun Tian Jiang Ji." It's called Suning relegate. Yes,
get relegated. Yeah,
sainty as it was at the time.
Yes, from that time we become enemies. Actually, before that match, there were quite a few Jiangsu fans like Shenhua very much, because when Jiangsu was struggle in the second tier in League One, Shenhua was the only top team in Changsanjiao.
Yangtze Delta, yeah.
The Yangtze Delta, yeah.
Yes, yes. A few Jiangsu fans treat Shenhua as their home team. Things get different from that time, and it's getting worse and worse after that.
That's really interesting, yeah.
Yeah, some good insight. It's actually, I mean, if listeners want to go down a rabbit hole, it's one of the slow-burning CSL rivalries, actually. There have been some absolutely cracking games between them over the years, some crazy comebacks at both ends, and definitely increasing kind of animosity off the pitch. I want to come back with some questions. It seems that the fans are really angry this year. Sun, would it be fair to say that it's only this season that fans are starting to really voice their anger at the club's owners? You know, prior to this year, were they a lot happier with the investment, with the competitiveness of the side?
Actually, I think there were two parts of the issue. For the first, Suning almost halt their big investment since 2017. If you check our squad, we didn't sign big name. We haven't signed big name since 2017. Yes, we signed quite a few big names in 2016 when Suning acquired the team. But a year after that, they stopped the team. So, but they insist they will win the CSL in 3 years. They will win the Asia Champions League in 5 years. But actually, they didn't bring in any comparable players, so that's why fans feel cheated by the club. That's one thing. And another issue is Suning had some kind of management over the fan groups. For example, they had a performance review for each fan groups. They will check their attendance and check the noise they made by each game, and they will rank all the fan groups to say which is best, and they offer more season tickets next year for this group. So since that, fan group had some kind of conflict with the Suning club. Suning is treating them as their own employee, their own staff, and gave them goals to reach. They were not independent.
That's remarkable, and at the same time not at all surprising, and that's the beauty of Chinese football, just when you think you've heard it all, that there's something like that that comes up. Brandon, I want to come to you on this as a complete kind of outsider's view to the local feuds that go on down south. What's the perspective that you have on this? Is it a case of, you know, one club who flew a little bit too close to the sun and then have dialed things back and the fans are justifiably unhappy? Is this a symptom of those kind of clubs outside the top three increasingly having nothing to play for? How much do you think this is the kind of thing that we might see repeated in other cities in coming months or years?
Yeah, I think there's a couple points I'd like to hit on. One, and I've talked to this and I've talked with Sun a little bit about this on Twitter as well, is the fact that this just seems to be odd timing, because much of the he's expanded on it a little bit, but much of the complaints seem to be tied directly to Suning and the employees at matches who are just sitting around, and that's been sort of commonplace for all of Suning matches since the start of things. And like Sun said, his account is Forza Suning instead of Forza Jiangsu, and so the fans have sort of very easily rolled over when it went from Sainty to Suning because of the money involved and it being a local company and everything, that they thought it was going to get a lot better. But outside of some big spending on foreigners and some, a bit of output the first season or two, they've more or less given up. They sold off Sun Ke, who was their best Chinese player. They can spend as much as they want on foreigners, but the Chinese side just isn't there. And there's no one. I mean, the market right now, there isn't much availability. And then you go on to see social media and stuff, and some of the reactions of fans tearing up their season tickets, or the father ripping the shirt off his kid. It's just insanity. It's like, what are the expectations realistically? Considering the side they have, and considering Suning also owns Inter Milan, and you know, that's sort of their, it always seemed like Jiangsu was going to be their stepchild.
Yeah, that's a good point. I want to put a pin in that and come back to the Inter question, actually, because I think that's definitely a factor here. But Cam, I want to get your perspective on this, because from the outside, again, I actually have a lot of sympathy here. In a way, the timing is odd, you know, that they're not exactly threatened by relegation, like some other clubs that we're not going to talk about in this pod. But I have a lot of sympathy for the fans in that now that there's not a lot of investment and their side is a long way off the top three and they don't look like they're going to be challenging for silverware, if your team's not winning something, then you really need to feel represented by your team, and that's a big part of kind of off-the-field football culture. So on a personal level, I actually have a lot of time for the fans who are protesting. We could talk maybe about whether they're protesting in the best way or not, but what's your perspective on that?
It's quite surprising to me to see this protest break out when it did. I can understand why the fans are upset to lose their rival, and I can see that there's some issues being building up, but it looks like a typical straw which broke the camel's back situation. I just think that, I mean, I reached out to Suning to have this discussion and invite him on the pod, and it was interesting that although he's probably seen my tweets on Twitter and he's, I mean, I'm a Xinhua fan, he readily agreed, and he recognises that we are both people who are very much supportive of people who support the local club. The fact that we support rival teams is not really relevant. And I think in this case, in the same way, I'm very happy, or not even happy, but I just think it's really a very healthy development to see fans, no matter who they are, to stand up and speak out about their grievances with their club, because I think the issues which happen with Suning are more than likely to be happening at other clubs in the CSL to a greater or lesser extent. So what I think is a good thing is that I think it just sends a message to club owners that they need to maintain the relationship with the fans and they need to think about what they're doing, and they can't. It's not like Chinese football 10 years ago where they could just do whatever they wanted and didn't pay any attention to fan relations. I think Chinese football has matured and the fan culture has definitely matured, and this is actually a good sign. I think in some ways it's a good sign that things are developing where fans have an expectation of having a certain level of a care which they expect and some respect from their club. On the other hand, it's just disappointing that it has to result in protest for anything to change, but this is Chinese football we're talking about, and I think we need to see more of this, to be quite honest.
Well, and whether things will change, of course, is a good question. I mean, that leads me nicely into two things, actually, that I wanted to ask you, Suan. Firstly, I want to come back to Brandon's point about Inter Milan, because, again, from the outside, it feels like as soon as Suning invested heavily in ownership of Inter, they really started to, you know, disregard or treat their domestic side as kind of, you know, second cousin or the kind of, you know, the ugly stepchild of the family. I mean, is that how it's felt to the fans? And then I also want to pick up on what Cam said. Do you think that things will change? What do you think is going to happen next? And in an ideal world, what would be the resolution to this kind of mini crisis that you're going through?
Yes, I agree. The money spent on Inter may provide better values than the money spent on Suning, because you know the Chinese football environment is not so good at the moment, and Inter just have more influence across the world. So they can bring Suning more value on their marketing or on their value. Yes, but I think Inter and Suning can, Jiangsu Suning can integrate very well because, for example, we signed an Eder from Inter, and Eder is very professional, one of the most best foreign players in our history. I think that's a good pattern to bring some Inter players into Jiangsu Suning, and also some good Italian coaches to improve our youth academy. This can be great ecosystem. They can grow together.
Yeah, I mean, in theory, it could be such a beautiful situation, but it's obviously not working out that way. What do you think is going to happen with the fan groups? Do you think we're going to see them continuing to protest through the season? Do you think that the club management will make any changes? What do you think is going to happen next?
I think Suning have to sign two new foreign players before the transfer window shut down. Because we only have three foreign players, and now Paleta is facing a 6 to 8 matches suspension because of his brutal fall last night. So signing big name can be a good sign to bring back fans to the stadium, and I think the club, the management still have to give fans a direct some kind of apologize or some kind of willing to communicate with fan groups instead of the current situation. They refuse to communicate with fans. They refuse to respond to fans at all.
There's some really interesting points there, actually, that I want to follow up on in the second half of the show in terms of some of the things that fans are looking for is just the same as what you'd get at clubs anywhere in the world, and some of it definitely has these unique Chinese football characteristics. We'll come back to that after we take a short break in the middle of the show for our regular section, Phenomenon of the Week.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
And to recap the poll from last week, the winner was the Return of Punishment Bingo and that wonderful description of the ban for Fellaini, beating into second that lovely Guan team goal, and unfortunately in third, the kind of heartfelt testament to Freddie Guarin and his time in Shanghai. Cam, that does mean that you get to go first with a nomination this week. Who or what has caught your eye in the weird and wonderful world of Chinese football?
Well, you remember last week I said I was going to give a more kind of out there nomination in the hope of coming last. So I'm glad my little ploy's worked. I'm gonna tactical nominate. It's very, very CSL. I'm gonna nominate Ide's VAR yellow card, which he got against Hubei, because of all the red cards, of all the VAR decisions I've ever seen, that was just completely baffling. I have no idea how he possibly managed to not get a red card. Studs up, full contact on Mascherano's shins. Referee looks at VAR and gives you yellow. I was just flabbergasted by that, so that's my nomination.
Clumsy, not malicious, but it's not a hill that I'm willing to die on. Moving onwards, Brendan, what's your nomination?
Fernandinho's free transfer to Hebei. I think we all know that this is Evergrande's doing, and the fact that we all just that they're trying to make us ignore that and call it a free transfer with Chongqing losing one of its best players is just hilarious.
The silent hand that moves the transfer market. I'm going to step aside so we don't have too many nominations this week. Sun, as our guest, what's your nomination? Who or what do you think has been the biggest news story of the last week in Chinese football?
I think it was our two cards in a single match. Ye Chongqiu and Xie Pengfei booked the red card in a single match. That was the first time that the Jiangsu team booked two red cards, if I recall correctly. The match was terrible. And when Xie Pengfei booked the red card, it seems like a relax for him to get out of the pitch.
Get out of the firing line. There's a lot of VAR talk and punishment in the nominations this week. Interesting. It's been an emotional and violent week in Chinese football. Look forward, as always, to seeing how the listeners vote. So we did a bit of a deep dive into the Jiangsu situation in the first half of the show, and in the second half I want to try and broaden the perspective and look at what does this mean for the game in general and have a bit of a chat about fan involvement in the game. Brandon, I'm going to come to you first. There's a couple of things that Sun mentioned wrapping up about Jiangsu there, which I wanted to kind of follow up on. One of them being, you know, if they do open the checkbook and sign some big names, then all will be forgiven by the fans. And secondly, this idea of kind of apologies and direct communication between fan groups and the club, that to me feels very unique to Chinese football. What are some of the other elements of fan groups in the CSL or in even, you know, League One and below that are kind of unique to China and that you don't see replicated elsewhere in the world?
Well, I think one of the biggest elements going into what you're saying is that there isn't really a dialogue. I mean, there isn't a dialogue that exists. It's more of lecturing from the club and from the local police at times to the fan groups. There isn't a lot of room and there isn't a lot of give and take involved, at least when, when times are good or at the start of the season, there might be a little of that. But immediately when things hit hard times or when an issue comes up or when the fan groups have an issue with over security or something, It becomes a lecture and there isn't any feedback there. And so I think that's actually somewhat universal, at least being a part of American fan groups. I know it's similar there, whereas in Europe, the ultras tend to have a little more power. Another interesting thing, I think, that for a lot of teams, and talking about it with Jiangsu as well, is that their willingness to just sort of roll over when a new corporate power takes over and changes the club identity. The Evergrande fans or the fans in Guangzhou will just chant Guangzhou Dui the whole time. But a lot of the teams, even after the turnovers, will still chant the corporate name instead of the traditional name or the city or provincial name or something. And I think that's pretty unique.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I wonder, Cam, how much of this kind of acceptance of the corporate naming comes down to that kind of relationship with authority that Brandon mentioned, and also what we spoke about with, you know, employees infiltrating the fan groups or just having specific employee sections, which is something I've only really seen in Chinese games compared to elsewhere in the world.
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. As Brandon mentioned, as China is just such an inherently top-down place that people tend to accept situations which are foisted upon them as They have a feeling that a distance of, they feel distant from power and they feel powerless to change it, which in a lot of cases is right, but not always. Also, the media tend to use these company names instead of the provincial or city name as well. That tends to just be done out of for some kind of custom. Although, don't forget that in Chinese football, there's quite a high turnover of fans. Whilst some clubs have got really established fan bases, there's still lots of new fans coming in. And they naturally won't have as big a problem shouting like Shangang Dui for SIPG or Suning Dui for Jiangsu. They wouldn't have as much an objection to that as fans who've been there for a while. So I think those are the main reasons for that.
Yeah, some very good points. And actually, Sun, I wanted to come back to you as well. We've mentioned a few times social media, and Cam mentioned media there, and I know that one of the bugbears we have on the pod is the local media tends to be really kind of supportive of the clubs and the club management, and it's quite rare to see kind of traditional media really criticising a transfer policy or managerial appointments or what's going on at the club. And it feels like a lot of that kind of critical work and, you know, checking in on the club really seems to come down to individual fans and to individual fans over social media and so on. Do you think that, you know, the rise of kind of Weibo and Twitter over the past kind of decades been something that's changed the fan experience in China for you?
It's very important. If you check the media, the current football media in China, for example, PPTV, the broadcaster of CSL, it's a company owned by Suning. And also there was an APP called Dongqiudi. It's a football community. And the APP is also owned by Suning. So, and also a few media, Suning buys their advertisement from this media, so they can control this media. They can remove all the bad news from this media, and they can also have some good news some positive news about club on this media. So literally, fan has no official platform to express their willing, except Weibo and Baidu Tieba for such kind of grassroots social media. So social media is very important to express the willing, the happiness or the sadness about fans in these days, I think.
Yeah, that's actually really interesting to hear. And on the flip side of the coin, Brandon, do you think that social media in some ways leads to these extreme overreactions that we've talked about? Like, it almost seems when a team loses, people are trying to outdo themselves to be the first one to burn a shirt or rip up a season ticket or something like that. I mean, how much of it do you think is real and how much of it is performance art at this point?
Yeah, I think there tends to be a lot of that. I mean, with social media, you get a lot of talk that, you know, anywhere else would be sort of in the pub or amongst friends and people just putting up the most radical things. This player is crap. This player is Shui Hua. The manager needs to be fired. All of that sort of thing. It happens really fast. And I think it's an international, it's a global problem for sure. But I think in China, it tends to get pretty extreme at times as well.
And speaking of extremeness, Cam, I mean, how much respect do you think we should have for fans who do protest? Because it's obviously a culture and a country where politically you don't tend to see a lot of protest for obvious reasons. And fans are not even allowed to take, you know, flags of a certain size into grounds sometimes. So for them to demonstrate en masse against their club ownership is something that's really quite unusual and bold in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. And I think this goes to the very root of one of the issues with Chinese football and what the management of Chinese football doesn't understand. That is, in everyday life in China, Chinese people don't have much of a voice when it comes to voicing their dissatisfaction or unhappiness with certain things in their everyday lives or certain things in their work or just how China has been run in general. There's very little they can do. They have no choice but to work. They have no choice but to continue to try to earn money, support their family, or if there's something the government does they don't like, there's literally nothing they can really do about it. But when it comes to Chinese football, what I feel that the powers that be in Chinese football forget is that, yeah, they can be top down. They can tell everybody how they're going to do this. The police can tell fans to not bring flags or do this or don't do that or restrict their voice. But what they forget is that people do not have to go and watch Chinese football, and they can easily just turn around and walk out. And this is what the Jiangsu fans are doing, and that's why I think it's important that other fans, if they are dissatisfied, that there are things they can do, and that involves expressing their unhappiness in a rational way, a constructive way, or if they feel so unhappy they can simply choose not to go and watch their team for a certain period of time to make a point.
Yeah, that's excellent. Actually, to point out that no one other than the employees are going to the stadium, you know, because they have to. People are doing it out of choice. Sun, we don't get to have too many local voices on the pod, unfortunately. It's always great when we can. We've done some fan interviews with some of the Shenhua fans and with both of the guys who are here as well. I mean, for you, in a nutshell, what got you into supporting your club, and what does being a Jiangsu fan mean to you in the context of, you know, who you are as a person?
It's just about because I grew up in Nanjing, and at that time, even it's the worst, it's the darkest day for Jiangsu football. You know, in 1996, we relegated to Chinese League 2 in that year. But it's the only home team I can watch. And when I was a child, I don't know there are many football teams across the country. I just know there was only one team at my hometown. So I start to support the team and following the team. It has been about more than 20 years since that.
Yeah, I think that local loyalty and representation is key. Brandon, I'm going to come to all of you on this one, actually, but that touches on something I wanted to kind of wrap up the show with. Local representation is really important, especially if your team's not winning. Just taking a quick glance at the league, I feel like there are more fans who probably have reason to be unhappy than there are happy. I mean, obviously, if you're supporting one of the top three sides, then you've got to fancy their chances in the title race. You've got to be optimistic there. Otherwise, I mean, Chongqing and Wuhan are doing a bit better than they'll have expected. Henan always seem to have this really strong local pride. Other than that, a lot of the teams, there's not a lot to write home about. So, I don't know, is it not understandable that we're seeing more and more fan disenfranchisement?
I would say no. I think it's not really understandable. I think it goes down to really what the expectations are. And the teams at the top, I can see how it works. You know, if you're from Wuhan, or if you're from Nanjing, or if you're from Zhengzhou, God forgive you anyways, but if that's the case, you know, you're from this horrible, or this, you know, this city, millions of people and whatnot, and you know, you're hoping that your team is going to be going to have a decent season and everything, but you know, you go into the season knowing that the most you can probably play for is fifth place, and it's not you know, it makes the ups and downs, or especially it makes the downs and the losses to a local rival or something all that much more painful. You know, we see a stratification with leagues everywhere in the world where, you know, only two or three teams go into the season with any shot of winning, and everyone else knows that they're playing for maybe a spot in a continental competition or something like that. And so it can get more frustrating, but I think it's just where the money is. And I think with Jiangsu, the issue is that, you know, they kind of have more money than everyone else. They have more money than most of the other mediocre sides, and they have the ability to do more, but they haven't done very much with it.
Yeah, Cam, I'm going to ask you to follow up on that. I mean, after Brandon's done his part for the reputation of Beijing as a city that's snobbish about everywhere else in China there, do you think there are other fans who justifiably should be feeling as unhappy as Jiangsu fans are right now?
Actually, I think if you look at most of the clubs in the CSL right now, it's probably only Jiangsu and Xinhua who've got a really big grievance, because all the other teams are either kind of where you'd expect them to be, or they have something to rally against. I mean, take for example, like Guangzhou RNF. They're a club where if you choose to support RNF, then obviously you are not a fan who's going to be motivated by the prospect of seeing your club win a lot, because you've got Guangzhou Evergrande as an alternative you could choose instead. So there's one example. Then a lot of the other teams in the CSL are probably just happy to be there. Dalian, a team which had a lot of investment recently, and they are moving in an upwards direction quite slowly, but again, they are still fairly new back to the CSL. Shandong are always kind of doing the same kind of thing. They're always there. They always tend to be best of the rest. SIPG would be pretty happy. They won the league last year, and they're still doing well this year. I mean, maybe Evergrande, maybe some of the fans are perhaps be unhappy about some of the very strange transfer moves and naturalisation related transfers which the club have been doing. And I mean, I'm always criticising them for the increasing level of politicisation in terms of what the club does and how it's run, but I think most of the fans don't really care that much until they're winning. So I would say the CSL in general, fan wise, I think most of the fans will be relatively okay with how things are, save for one or two clubs, Xinhua and Jiangsu, as I said.
Yeah, both of which are overrepresented on this particular pod. Soon, I have one last question for you. You've spoken at length and quite eloquently about the frustrations you have with the ownership and the management of your club. Which clubs do you think are particularly well run? I mean, if Suning could copy the model of some of the clubs that are doing well, who would you like to see them kind of learn from or take a leaf out of?
I think Guan did the best. Beijing Guan did the best at their relationship with fans. Based on my observation, Guan had a great communication with their fans. They hold a lot of activities with fans, and they sell. They had a very great fan culture. Yes, I think Guan is the best among the CSL.
You shouldn't have said that. Brandon's insufferable enough at the best of times. You're only going to puff him up further now. But I mean, Brandon, do you think that's fair? Do you feel as a Guan fan that they are... You've spoken about how community engaged they are in the past, right?
I actually sort of disagree. I mean, the club does okay, but when the shit hits the fan or when things go wrong, they're just as bad as anyone else. I think part of it is that there's just a natural passion and fan culture here that exists and that sort of moves the needle a little bit and helps influence the club.
Yeah, perhaps still a little bit raw from some of those fan arrests and the lack of support from the club that we saw earlier on in the year, of course. Well, very good discussion, guys. Nice to take a step away from what's going on week to week and really talk a bit more about the culture and the fan experience behind the game. Hopefully we can have more pods like this through the year as well. Suen, great pod debut. Fantastic to have you on board, and hope that we can speak with you again in the future.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Cam, I mean, always a pleasure having you as well, and I'm sure we'll be speaking with you again next week.
Yeah, I'm just about to turn on my aircon again because it's a little bit noisy. I don't want everyone to be struggling to hear what I'm saying, but it means I'm in a bit of a sweaty mess right now. So Yeah.
There's an image that no one needed. And Brandon, thanks as always for giving us the view from the north. And you managed to get through this whole fan culture pod without having a pop at Renher having no fans. I'm really impressed.
Yeah. You know, their way end spoke volumes. And you know, I didn't mean to cause any offense to Nanjing. I'm headed there this weekend. But when it does come to Zhengzhou and Wuhan, those really are shitholes.
Well, it's bombshells like that that we love to leave you on. Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this pod. We'll be back to a regular schedule next week. We'll get more of your questions to field then. Please do rate and subscribe to the pod. Share this with friends if you enjoy it and you think they would as well. And do feel free to check out our Patreon page as well. But for this week, this has been your Chinese football podcast brought to you by Wild East Football. And I've been your host, Steve Crooks. We'll see you again next week.
The Chinese Football Podcast brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。